Okay, what's up, everybody? It's your boy Doggy Diamonds. This is Doggy Diamonds No Filter. But before we start, let's run the intro.
What's up, everybody? I go by the name of Doggy Diamonds. You are now listening to No Filter Podcast. No filter means honesty. If you're afraid of honesty, then this ain't the podcast for you. We gonna be honest today.
Yes, y'all heard the intro, and we're going to be honest today, and we have a guest today that's on the phone with me. Introduce yourself to the people.
What's up, everybody? My name is Soren Baker, and I'm the author of the new book that just came out called The History of Gangster Rap. It's in stores worldwide now.
Whoa, The History of Gangster Rap. So we got so much to talk about with that. So Soren Baker, for the people who don't know, they're like, who the hell are you? Like, how you just write a book about gangster rap? Give them a brief description of your background.
Yeah, I've had more than 3,500 articles published in the LA Times, Chicago Tribune, and others. I was one of the main editors for The Source for 6 years back in the day. I worked at Rap Pages as an editor there. I worked at Hip Hop DX, and I've had more than a dozen books out before this. This is my highest profile book and my one on the biggest publisher, Abrams Books, out of New York. So, yeah, man, it's been my life since I had my first article published when I was a teenager, and just been building ever since then, man. So I'm in it to win it, man.
So you're an actual journalist?
Yes. Yeah.
Reason why I say that, because you know that title is just so loosely thrown around, and everybody with a phone that has a camera is a journalist now. Did you actually go to school for this?
I did. I went to school for communications. My degree is not in journalism, but I did study journalism, and I worked on staff at my school newspaper. I went to Xavier in Cincinnati, Ohio. So I studied communications and I studied journalism as part of my degree program. But I do not have a degree in journalism.
So the year that you was at The Source, what year was this?
Well, I started writing for The Source when I was in college in 95. And then I got on full-time staff in 2003. And then I stayed on staff till 2009. So from 95 to 98, I wrote for The Source. And then I worked at Rap Pages from 98 to 2000. And during that time, obviously, I couldn't write for The Source. But once Rap Pages went away in the end of 2000, beginning of 2001, I was writing back for The Source. And then in 2003, I joined full-time on The Source and was the senior editor before moving up to executive editor. So I did a lot of big work over there from 03 to 09.
So when you say writer, that means you wasn't actually just a talking head. Like, you actually had to go in there and have your punctuation, grammar, spelling and all that, and have somebody overlook it. Like, you actually had to go at this time, you know, it definitely was computers, but it was a little bit more tedious than it is now. It might be a little easier for you, but you actually were writing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first couple thousand articles I wrote, man, there was no aggregation. It was me interviewing the artist, me doing the album review, or me going to the concert to review it, or me writing a culture or a trend piece. It was all original reporting. I did it myself. And when you write for the New York Times like I have, when you write for the LA Times like you have, when you write for the Chicago Tribune like I have extensively, you can't be coming in there not being able to write and do it in complete sentences and make sense and have it flow and have your research correct and all that type of stuff. So, you know, I'm not a dude that just came up that wanted to get a free t-shirt and hang out with Jay-Z at the club. Like, I got into it because I loved the music and I loved the writing about it. I loved thinking about it. I loved listening to it, covering it, interviewing the artists, and, you know, all that type of stuff. I got, you know, a lot of success, and I've written for more or less all the magazines and a lot of the major newspapers in the country. So, you know, I try to always approach it from the journalistic perspective instead of, I know a lot of people, even at some of the newspapers now and a lot of the magazines when I was coming up, they looked at it from a more sensationalistic or just like not official way. They looked at it more of a, I don't know, man. I just didn't like a lot of it.
So yeah, because I wanted to ask you, like, you also, so that means you were around for the magazine wars at one point, the hip-hop magazine wars.
Oh, yeah. I was in it before there were the magazine wars and all through all of them.
Wow.
So, yeah. I saw it all, man. It was wild.
Did that fuck shit up, basically? Because I remember, you know, I used to love Vibe. I used to love, Blaze magazine. I love XXL. I love The Source. I thought it was room for every magazine. King magazine. I thought everything was distinct in its own way and had its own little niche. But then it became a point where everybody was beefing, so we had to make a choice. Did that really fuck print culture up?
I think it did in a lot of ways because, you know, rap in general is a competitive sport. So, you know, that carries over to the people that wanted to write. And in my opinion, a lot of the people that wanted to write, unfortunately, some of them wanted to be the story, or they wanted to be part of the story. And that's something I always try to get away from and not be. And that's something that I think once the journalist tried to be famous or tried to be
all part in the of videos, the story, all in the, exactly. All in the, yeah, 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 got you.
Exactly. Once that happened, that was terrible for what was going on with the music coverage. And we saw that accelerate and really, really make a big deal because to your earlier question, man, you had at this time the popularity of the music and the popularity of the magazines, and you had a bunch of people that had no journalistic wherewithal, quote unquote, being journalists. And that, you know, I talk about that in my book, The History of Gangster Rap, in particular in the chapter where I talk about, and I call it the so-called East Coast, West Coast War. And I, you know, facts and my opinion and the opinion of the artists I interviewed all show that, you know, the media to some degree, if not a significant degree, was responsible for a lot of the negative stuff that happened between artists, because the magazine, the editors at the magazines and the writers would get attitudes at the artists, or if they didn't get access to the artists, the magazine would diss the artist and it had nothing to do with their music. And then the artists would be, you know, it's just a mess, man. It had nothing to do with journalism. It had to do with the ego and the pride, or whatever you want to label it, of the writers and the editors that, you know, started beefs through their publications. And, you know, that hurt a lot of artists. It hurt, it led to people directly and indirectly getting killed. It led to the publications losing their respect because, you know, as a kid, when I was reading The Source and when I was reading all the publications, I didn't read them to get some like crazy agenda. I read it to learn about the music. I read it to, you know, why did, you know, MOP make a record like they did? That's what I wanted. That's what I cared about. I didn't care that, you know,
who they had Mike beef Geronimo. With. Yeah, yeah. I know what you're saying. When we dealing with gangster rap, this is reason why this topic is so, you know, it's a arguing point, because the foundation of gangster rap is always going to be argued of who actually started gangster rap. You have different versions, I guess, depending on what region, depending on what area, people say who started it. Dougie Diamond's opinion is that it started with Schoolie D. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. That's what I believe. And I believe, Just Ice had a lot to do with it. Schoolie D, Just Ice, being from Brooklyn, New York, that's who I heard. From you doing your research, from you doing your research and putting together your book, who was the founder of gangsta rap? Now, remember, you're going to get in trouble for this. So,
Schoolie D is the founder and creator of gangsta rap. The full title of my book is The History of Gangsta Rap. From Schoolie D to Kendrick Lamar, The Rise of a Great American Art Form.
Okay.
So Schoolie D created it. Schoolie D's from Philadelphia, which means it was started on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And Schoolie D is the one that doesn't get enough credit. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to write the book, was to kind of lay down and cement that he's the one that started it. And I've known Schooly D since I was in college because he's my favorite rapper. And, you know, I interviewed him a number of times throughout the years, and I got an interview with him exclusive for the book. And he also gave me, I don't know if you remember, but back in the day, he used to draw all his artwork for his singles and then his self-titled album. Say that again?
No. I'm listening.
Yeah, and then for his, he drew the album artwork for his self-titled album and then for his Saturday Night, the album. So I got him to give me a piece of artwork that he had never published before, and that's in my book, The History of Gangsta Rap also. And it's very important, man, because, you know, I have Ice-T talk about it extensively in the book that, you know, Ice-T told me this whole story, and it's in a lot of detail in the book about how he was inspired by PSK.
Mm.
And then, you know, a lot of people, you know, if you look at it, the torch is Schooly D, PSK, Ice-T, Six in the Morning, and then Eazy-E with Boys in the Hood. Those are the three things, and they're all, you know, Schooly D gave birth to Ice-T in that regard, and Ice-T gave birth to Eazy-E in that regard. So it's like that's the direct lineage of those three songs that all, you know, start with Schooly D. So, you know, and Schooly D, for those that don't know, you know, they want to say, oh, well, he only didn't talk about much or whatever, but on PSK, PSK stands for Parkside Killers, in addition to what he says in the song. And then also, and that was the gang he was affiliated with. And then on his song, Parkside 5-2 on the Saturday Night album, he says, Parkside 5-2, my place in home. The PSK gangsters like to roam. Cheaper in the hand, 32 on her socks, protecting on turf like it was Fort Knox. I mean, dude, he's talking about he's got a gun. He's protecting his neighborhood. And he's going to, you know, get at you if he needs to. So that's, I mean, that sounds like a gangbanging song to me. Gangbanging.
Yeah, and his song is also featured in King of New York, too. A lot of people don't know that's Schooly D's music in King of New York.
Which I always thought was hilarious and ironic that the King of New York is from Philadelphia. But that's a side note.
Yeah. So gangster rap, it has changed over the years based off the image of the artist. You know, at one point, gangster rap was very, very dark. Very black clothes, very, you know, a lot of the gangster rappers had a certain outfit and an image that you could look at them and say, maybe it might have been a hoodie, a damn 40 ounce. Then it graduated to weed and then, you know, bandanas and flagging. Now, what does a gangster rapper look like?
That's a tough question, man, because the way that the image has been kind of appropriated and how gangs in general have evolved that, you know, now you'll have Crips wearing red and Bloods wearing blue. And it's like back in the day, if they were really trying to rep the set like that, I don't recall in videos or when I would later be around it, you know, I don't remember seeing that being the case as it is now. So it's tough to say, man.
And purses, it's tough to say. And wearing purses and dresses and shit, too. Maybe Stone Cold Gangsta Killers with dresses and purses and funny colors and shit. We got to throw that in there also. Like, it's all the way different. You know, funny hairstyles and shit, you know.
It's a whole different ballgame, man. And it's very different. You know, the signature look to me was the Eazy-E look with the Jerry curl, the Loke sunglasses, the Raiders hat, and the black jacket and the flannel and the khakis. Like, that to me was, you know, what a quote-unquote gangster or gangster rapper looked like. And that, you know, we've moved away from that, but I think that's the definitive look if you had to have one.
So, I guess you, from your book, did you go, you went from A to Z, or like, how did you put it in order of gangster rappers, because you say from Schooly D to Kendrick Lamar. Did you name a bunch of people, or how did you put that together?
I more or less did it chronologically,
okay,
as much as possible, because, you know, some things are happening at around the same time. So you might read something that's happening in 1992 in one chapter, and then in the next chapter I have to go back and explain 1991 to get up to that point in 1992. But basically it's a chronological breakdown of how the music was created and evolved from 1985 And even with that, with Schooly D, I talk about records that came before that that were influential to Schooly D, or that also had social commentary in the way that gangster rap became famous for, obviously with the message. But even before, you know, even before and around the same time, you had Curtis Blow with The Breaks, and he's talking about societal problems and issues, but he did it in a much more like, oh shucks, or haha type of way, or that's The Breaks. But he was talking about the same type of things, just from a very non-confrontational, non, as you said, angry, dark way. He was doing it more in a lighter way. So, you know, I try to put context to everything in the History of Gangster Rap book, so that when somebody would read it, they would understand not only what was going on in the United States at the time, which I set up with every chapter, but also what else was going on in the music and rap in general at that time, so that it's a lot of context into it. It's not just, oh, and this year, you know, in 1991, Ice Cube released the Death Certificate album, and it got a lot of acclaim. You know, it's not that. It's, this is what was happening in America in 1991. This is what else was happening in rap in 1991. This is what was happening in the world in 1991. So when Ice Cube released Death Certificate, this is why he did it. And these are the type of songs that he talked about and why those songs were important at that time.
So if you had to define gangster rap, how would you define it? Because you said the message, but the message to me would form under the title of reality rap. What's the difference between rap and gangster rap?
Well, that's something I talk about in the book, the History of Gangster Rap. Ironically, a lot of the artists, of course, didn't like the title gangster rap. So I have a whole sidebar of that where I have CJ Mack, MC Ren, DJ Quick, Paris, who's known as the Black Panther rap, and I even talked to Cormega because I'm friends with Cormega. And all these dudes basically explain how they don't like the name gangster rap, or they're not, you know, fans of it per se. So to me, the gangster rap, to the people that make it and the people that love it, is also like the street rap, the reality rap, but the media labeled it gangster rap. So because of that, you know, you have to look at gangster rap in a certain way. And because of that, once Schooly D did what he did and the genre exploded with Ice-T, it exploded with NWA, you still had people like Boogie Down Productions with Criminal Minded and Just Ice that were making gangster rap early. But then once Ice-T and once NWA came through, obviously Boogie Down Productions changed to conscious rap with the second album.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, they weren't part of that world anymore. But the significant thing is that once gangster rap became what it was famous for, is when the dudes really started rapping about the gang life in LA and growing up in Southern California, and whatever city that was, whether that was Watts or Inglewood or Compton or South Central, what have you. That's, you know, what I focused on. And I have a quote from, you know, my friend Big Trey D, when I was talking to him, when I was writing the book. You know, he even says, like, you know, we didn't create gangster rap, but what we did with gangster rap is what influenced the world. You know, like, you know, dudes from New York and all over the country were wearing bandanas. Ja Rule singing love songs, wearing bandana with his shirt off, you know, looking like a LA gang member, but he's singing with Lil Mo and Ashanti.
Got you.
It's like, it's the reach of it is like staggering and astonishing. And when you look at it, you know, it's birthed from the gang culture of the Los Angeles metropolitan area. And that goes on throughout the world, you know, and obviously, you know, there's certain songs that I discuss in detail in the book, The History of Gangster Rap, like Ice Cube, for instance, had the My Summer Vacation, where he rapped about the gangs moving out to St. Louis, for instance, and the migration of the gangs. And then DJ Quick, on his 1992 album, Way Too Funky, had a song called Just Like Compton.
Just Like Compton.
He's talking about when he would go on tour and he would go to San Antonio, he would go to the Bay Area, he would go to Denver. He would see, like, oh, I thought Bloods and Crips were just in LA and in Compton and in my neighborhood, but they're all over the country now. And so that's the difference to me. Like, when you're really talking about that, that is what dominates what gangster rap is. And I explained that in the introduction and different parts of the book, that people that rhyme about criminal activity or that they are a tough guy or whatever, or that my crew will beat you up or something, like that's, you know, that's not gangster rap, because you're not, that's not gang banging. That's not, a gangster can mean a lot of different things to people, but what gangster rap is, you know, synonymous with the gang culture. And to me, and the influence of that is what to me is the dominant influence. It's not people saying they're Italian crime, you know, make believe, whatever Italian crime family they want to align themselves with, or, you know, that type of stuff. This is talking about stuff that actually these dudes were either around or directly participated in.
So, and so according to that, in today's standard, Tekashi 6ix9ine would be a gangster rapper.
Yeah, when his rise, you know, people can say he is or is not affiliated or real or what have you. But by the time I was wrapping up the book, I didn't get to really include or mention much of him, because like records back in the day, your book doesn't, it just came out in October, but that doesn't mean I finished it the last week of September, you know? So, you know, you have to print and have edited and all that other stuff. So, you know, but I mentioned like how Cardi B with Bodak Yellow, I mean, that's clearly a blood reference.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I mentioned those type of things to show how current it is and to have, you know, recent stuff, but, you know, it's definitely reaches into artists from all over the country and definitely the current era.
Let me ask you, being around it and covering it for different publications and different, you know, the VH1s and just being, you know, where are you based? Where you from?
I'm from Maryland.
Okay.
Born and raised in Maryland. And then I went to school in Cincinnati, and then I got my job at Rap Pages. So I moved out to LA, and I took after a couple of years, I took a quick detour in Chicago, but then I've been in LA, you know, basically almost half my life now, one half in Maryland, one half in LA.
Okay. So I'm asking you that because being in Los Angeles, which I figured, what was the most dangerous time in hip hop that you remember based off of this gangster rap shit? Like when you felt like the energy in the street was like, somebody is gonna die, which eventually, unfortunately, ended up happening. But what time did you feel was the most dangerous time?
Well, my firsthand experience was right after Biggie got killed. I just remember being in LA and just anywhere that I went that was rap affiliated of any sort, it just, there was a sense of sadness and caution and like what's about to happen. Like it just, I'm sure you've been in places where it just has a weird energy.
The aura.
And like,
yeah, the aura.
Yeah. It has an aura of like something is not right.
Something gonna pop off.
That was the atmosphere of the whole, everywhere I went, you know, when I was here. So that was like a rare thing. I've experienced that when I've been at a club or an event or if I knew somebody was mad at me, but I'd never experienced that just being somewhere for like an extended period. And that was wild, you know.
Being in LA during those them times writing for some of the publications, before Biggie got killed, did you ever have any run-ins or been out when Death Row was out, you know, a mobbing in the streets? Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I was at the Source Awards in Pasadena when they when they rushed the stage and tried to get Snoop and there was a riot.
Wow.
Like I was there, so that was wild to see all the dudes in Death Row shirts run up on the stage and try to get at Snoop and he got away. And then I'd been at Master P, I Got the Hookup Comedy Jam, I think is what it was called. But that was in Universal Amphitheater at Universal Studios. And same thing. It was a No Limit concert rather than the Source Awards. But basically, they tried to get at Snoop. And that was a crazy experience because, you know, in the No Limit songs, like a lot of hardcore rap or street rap or gangster rap, they had, you know, bullet gunshots in the songs. So, like, there was one time they thought it was gunshots from the song, but it wasn't, you know? So it was just wild. It was just wild, man. I saw a lot of stuff back in the days from just being a rap fan, being around stuff, and then actually when I was working or, you know, going to see a show. So it's just, it's wild, man.
Yeah, you know, so a lot of people might feel like gangster rap was kind of a little sensationalized and really commercialized, and that led to the demise of a lot of people, communities, and somewhat the art form of music, because everybody wanted to be gangster after a while. Like, the R&B singers was gangsters now, you know. What's your feelings when people say, man, you help exploit this shit? Like, you wasn't from the streets, but you helped write about it, and here it is, you writing a book about it, and, you know, you kind of fucked the game up, and look what happened. People are dying behind this. What do you want to say to them people? Because if you haven't gotten any of that flack yet, I'm pretty sure you will. There's going to be somebody somewhere saying, well, why are you reporting this, and why are you putting this out there? You know, you're part of the problem. What do you want to say to those people?
Well, I think for anybody that reads the book, The History of Gangster Rap, I really try to explain that this is not mindless music. This is music that has a message that's very powerful. If you go back to look at Schoolie B on PSK, he talks about pulling a gun out on a dude, but then says, I'm not going to jail because of my educated mind. It's not worth doing the time. So it's like, if you actually really listen to the music, a lot of it is not glorifying violence. In fact, it's the opposite. If you listen to a lot of Ice-T's music, he's talking about, there's a song he has, Pain. You know, he's talking about, yeah, the highs are great. You know, you got the money, you got the girls, and you got the nice car and whatever. But then what about when you get shot or you get incarcerated or your mom, you know, is on drugs or your sister has a crack baby? Like, that's the thing that the music to me is far more valuable for. And I think that the artists that are lesser tiered artists are going to be the ones that have to rely on the shock value or the exploitative nature of the music. It's not the quality artists. It's not the ones that are telling these amazing stories like the people I named. And then, you know, also the practitioners that go now. Like, right now, Vince Staples is my favorite guy that makes music that revolves around gangs and stuff. And if you listen to his, you know, Hell Can Wait, or his Summertime 06 albums, or his Shine Cold Chain Volume 2 mixtape, those three in particular, even Stolen Youth mixtape he had with Mac Miller, Larry Fisherman, it's like, when you listen to Vince Staples, he's explaining to you, like, one of his songs, 6500, he says, common sense is gone when the pressure's on. I'm in a car full of dudes, but I'm alone. He's explaining, like, the traps and the problems and the bad things that come with gangbanging. And that's the thing that, to me, the music is really about. Ice Cube wasn't rapping about Black Korea and the unfortunate stuff that was happening with the Asian community and Black people in South Central Los Angeles when people were getting shot and killed because they went to buy a bottle of orange juice. I talk about that in the History of Gangster Rap. So it's the critics, you know, journalists included, unfortunately, but it's the critics that basically heard the violence, or they heard someone used to call someone a bitch, or they heard, like, oh, he's rapping about the Bloods or whatever. They're looking at it from a surface level and not really listening to the lyrics. I'm sure you as a rap fan have heard yourself so many times people say, oh, well, they're just talking about whatever. And you're like, no, because they don't understand the lyrics, or they don't pay attention. They may hear the profanity or whatever, but they're not hearing the message of, you know, the negative things, the reality that comes with it. And I think that's what made what Schoolie D, Ice-T, Ice Cube, Conscious Most Wanted, DJ Quick, even Project Pat, you take it to the South. Project Pat has a lot of cautionary tales. So does Scarface.
Ghetto Boys, yeah.
Ghetto Boys. This is why the music is so powerful, because it talks about what's going on. And it's, you know, It's the voice of the voiceless.
I think I'm asking you that because we know of being in the culture for so long and you know, covering the culture. We know of some of these people are really, really, you know, who they say they are, and been around what they say they've been around. But then we also know that the music business, the music industry have created narratives for some of these artists that don't exist or push some of these artists to be a certain way based off of someone else's success in the same genre of gangster rap. So then you have these creative players like 2K. And what do you think about the music business creating gangster rap to keep, because you know a lot of beefs were funded, a lot of situations were funded, and it was good for business until somebody really get hurt and die. Then gangster raps get blamed, but not knowing, the people don't know that this was created. Did you touch on that in the book at all?
Well, I touched especially about the fallout in that chapter with the so-called East Coast, West Coast War, and that led to some of the changes in the music. So for me, I'm never an advocate of, you know, negativity for negativity's sake. But I also have to say, like, whether it's an insidious plot from a record company or what have you, it's ultimately, in my opinion, it comes down to the artist. If you're out there making the music and you're being, you know, felonious with it, then that's your responsibility. Like, you're choosing to make that decision. A record company is trying to make money. So look at Milli Vanilli. They tried to sell those dudes as singing songs, but they weren't. So, you know, it's like, if people are going to make something that's disingenuous, that's on the artist. The record company is about to make money.
But what reason, so they don't... the reason why I'm asking you that, because from the standpoint of, you know, you got young, you know, poor black and Latino youth that money is being dangled in their face. And, you know, this is your way out. Be this. Put on this bandana. Say you'll kill this motherfucker. Say you'll do this. And you don't think that the music industry has some type of responsibility for it's almost exploitation.
Well, I agree with that in the sense that that shouldn't be done in general, but I think it's a much deeper problem. It's a societal issue to where you're creating an environment to where, in particular, black and brown people feel so disenfranchised that that is appealing to them. That's, to me, the bigger issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if and when that happens in the record industry, it's terrible. But the bigger atrocity is the fact that that even is a situation that can exist. And that's sadly a reflection on how our society here in the United States of America is set up. That doesn't have the record companies like the 30th or 40th tier of the problem there. You know, it's the education system, it's slavery, it's racism, it's classism, it's economic disparity, it's lack of education, lack of resources. There's, like I said, 30 or 40 things you get to before, oh, well, this dude decided to be a fake gangster to try to help his situation, you know?
Yeah, do you remember a point where you almost was, you almost got clowned for saying you was a rapper? Like, a rapper was looked at as not, like, a serious person? Like, everybody didn't want to rap? Like, it was, yo, I rap, like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, what the fuck is this? We a rapper? What, you're a clown, you know what I'm saying? Now yeah, it's like, everybody raps.
Yeah, I mean, even me listening to rap, they're like, well, why do you like that? You know, mm-hmm. Like, it's a lot of things that have changed. And that's the thing, like, rap, for all of the negative things that rap has brought to the table, on the flip side, rap has been immensely beneficial to thousands of people's lives as far as money, access, empowerment, education, any way you can look at it, man, rap has been right there. So, like, on the one hand, there's some negative things that you could say rap has done, absolutely. But I'd also be able to point to 100 or 1,000 or 2,000 things that rap did that were beneficial. Like, a lot of black men in particular, and even black women, have had careers and have had entertainment companies that they wouldn't have had, or they didn't have them in entertainment. Obviously, they're smart, intelligent, and successful, but they wouldn't have had it in that route, at least. So, you know, it's created a lot of opportunities for people.
20 years ago, if I told you Tupac would be dead, Biggie would be dead, Jam Master Jay would be dead, Eazy-E would be dead, Suge Knight would be in prison for, you know, which seems like is a life sentence based off his age. And Snoop Dogg would be with Martha Stewart doing a show. What would you have said to all of that?
The Snoop one, to me, would have been the most unlikely. Okay. Some of those dudes were already dead, unfortunately, 20 years ago. But the Snoop, that would have been the furthest thing from my mind, because it's just a very bizarre combination. And then on top of that, it's the fact that I would have thought Snoop could have even had a television show after being on death row, after being on trial for murder, after being, you know, a gang member and all that stuff. It's just all unfathomable.
Yeah, you're right. 20 years ago, they were already passed away. They've been actually almost like 22 years ago for Tupac, at least, and Easy a little bit. I think did the Suge thing shock you and surprise you, or was you being around the climate? Was you like it was only a matter of time? How did you take to that news?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised, because I remember being out here, you know, in the aftermath of Tupac and Biggie's murders. And, you know, something that's not talked about a lot is a lot of people around these guys also died, you know, by murders. Mm. So, you know, it's not just that Biggie and Tupac and a couple other people died. These are like, you know, a lot of people affiliated or that worked for death row or were down or whatever. They died too, man. But yo, I had told Steel that I had to bounce because I got to get my daughter, so I got to go pick her up, so I got to go.
All right, it is what it is. So we could do a part two to this. This is Doggy Diamonds No Filter. We talking to Soren Baker. Make sure, just let them know where they could get the book at.
Yeah, make sure to pick up the book, The History of Gangsta Rap. It's available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble. And if you'd like to support the independent retailers, you can find the one near where you live on indiebound.com, IndeBounde, or BOUND.com. And follow me on all social media at Soren Baker, SORENBAKER. And check me out on YouTube at Unique Access ENT on YouTube.
All right, so that's what it is. This is Soren Baker, Doggy Diamonds No Filter. I'm going to close out. So I'll build with you later on, bro. We got some other business to talk about. So we'll build later on, and I'll just close out. Peace.
I appreciate it.
Yep, peace. So yeah, you could cop that book, The History of Gangsta Rap. You know, gangsta rap is near and dear to me. Growing up with Biggie, being from the same neighborhood, and I seen with the so-called East Coast, West Coast beef, how that ended to his untimely demise, you know, and it was just deeper than the music. And I think, you know, one day we gotta have a big round table conversation, not to pull any scabs off or just like to rehash anything, but just, you know, that shit is so much questions are unanswered with that. You know, so much questions are unanswered, and many of the people that can answer the questions don't answer the questions. They have gotten away with not answering certain things. And, you know, some people were able to sweep certain things under the rug and go on with their life. Some people were able to, you know, finagle their way into other situations and doing other things. But it's so much unanswered. And many people have passed away and died based off of that in this so-called gangster rap thing. You know, and then there's some people who still was a part of it then who didn't grow up and still acting like they are walking around, you know, like they're walking around like that shit is still cool to be a certain way that ended to people, you know, dying and getting hurt. So that's what it is. I'm Doggy Diamonds. This is Doggy Diamonds No Filter. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you like. Make sure you comment. Make sure you rate on all audio platforms. Thank everybody for their support. That's what it is. I'm out of here. Peace.
All right, all right. I got to get the fuck out of here. Thank you for listening to Doggy Diamonds No Filter Podcast. If you like this podcast, make sure you share this. Spread the word. Talk about it. Argue with me. I don't give a fuck what you do. Leave a comment. This is Doggy Diamonds. I'm out of here. See you on the next podcast. Peace. Doggy Diamonds did this. Did this.